The ancient root of modern self-godhood. Now, it's pretty obvious to most Christians to say that, you know, the want or the desire for a person to be their own God is nothing new. It comes from the book of Genesis, really, when the serpent tempted Eve and said, you know, you can be as gods. You know, basically you can be your own God. You don't need a God above you. You don't need to be subservient to anybody. There's other areas, though, that we can learn. This is an ongoing human problem. Now, a lot of the secular world, materialistic world, they would say that that's not a problem, that we should pursue that, even if it doesn't really mean anything, you know, literal, but we should pursue that, and we should, in a sense, be our own gods. We should only be accountable to ourselves and no imaginary higher power that's out there. But Christians take a different approach, because obviously we do believe in a God. We do believe in the God of the Bible. We believe in Jesus Christ. And that is who, that's who we serve. And through that comes a lot of benefit that we wouldn't have if we were our own gods, because Jesus is perfect. We are not. We make mistakes. Jesus doesn't. So we get to learn from the example of a perfect and eternal being who not only knows everything, but created everything, including us, including our perceptions. So it's this ongoing struggle throughout humanity. Philosophers have tried to deal with this. A lot of other religions have tried to deal with it. But there's an interesting story that I think kind of helps formulate this a little bit better. Now I'm working on a new project, a new book with somebody. I can't release any details about it yet, but it's very exciting. It's something that has surprisingly not been done before. It deals in part with my experience in New Age. A lot of people have been asking me to write about that. I've done a few interviews about it and stuff. So that plays a part, but it's not that. It's broader than that, and it's more helpful than just that. But you know, some of this does have to do with like New Age stuff, and that is a big pursuit in New Age. Just recently, I did a video on is it morally a good thing to be your own God? You know, is that a noble pursuit? And in the video, I argue no. It's actually selfish, even if the individual doing it doesn't mean it to be. So there are ways. Now, I do believe in the Bible as a literal and also as a metaphorical book. What I mean by that is there's some parts that are supposed to be literal. There are some parts that's supposed to be metaphorical. Some parts are poetic. Some parts aren't. I don't take the entire thing literally. I don't even take a conversation that I have with my kids literally every single time. You know, that's incredibly limiting. Try living your life where everything you hear from everybody, no matter what it is, you just take absolutely literally. You will drive yourself insane and you'll have no friends. That's how that works, because you wouldn't be able to use any euphemisms. You wouldn't be able to you would take everything they say at face value and wouldn't look into the deeper richness of what they're trying to communicate, their ideas that they're trying to communicate to you. Well, the Bible's the same way. I mean, it talks in literal terms, but it talks in metaphorical and poetic terms too. And sometimes even a literal story can teach something metaphorically. And you know, that's kind of how the Bible can be like this living sort of document that is incredibly beneficial, of course, for the entire church, the corporate body of the church, but it's also incredibly beneficial for the individual. You know, there are times where I can read a verse and it means something to me, and it's not going to mean that thing to you or to somebody else. That's okay to a certain point. That's okay as long as you realize it's an individual thing. If you go then and try to teach it as if this is what the Bible meant, then you that's where you start to get into dangerous territory. That's when you need a show like Chalk Talk to help you work out what the original message behind the story is. So there's two ways of looking at stuff like that. Chalk Talk is a show that I host with Donna Howell for Skywatch TV, and every week we We challenge modern Christianity, basically. We look at what the Bible really says about this or that. What does this or that really mean? For example, my favorite episode that we've done so far is the lukewarm church from Revelation, because we hear that a lot. Well, what does that really mean, though? What does it mean to be hot or cold for God? You know, both are actually good things. You never hear that in church, because you hear, the hot, that's good because you're on fire for the Lord. But cold, that means you're distant. And no, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Being cold doesn't mean that you're distant. And it means, and why would God rather have you be distant than be in the middle? What it actually means is it's cold and refreshing, and it has its own purposes. So it's a good thing. I don't want to get too much into that because I want to talk about this godhood stuff. But if you haven't had a chance, go check out Chalk Talk. It's youtube.com/chalktalkofficial. That's where you can find that. Look up the lukewarm episode especially. I think that's the best one that we've done. And it's really short, too. It's only a few minutes long. But the ancient root of modern self-godhood. Now, this pursuit of being one's own God, like we said, is nothing new. And in the Christian interpretation, it's the oldest deception, which we've heard this before. And we're not going to focus so much on Genesis, but just for people who might not be familiar with this. Genesis 3:1-5 says, "Now the serpent was more crafty than any other beast of the field that the Lord God had made. He said to the woman, 'Did God actually say you shall not eat of any tree in the garden?' And the woman said to the serpent, 'We may eat of the fruit of the trees in the garden, but God said, you shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the garden, neither shall you touch it, lest you die.' But the serpent said to the woman, 'You will not surely die, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil.'" Okay? So that's the basis of this idea. Now we can trace that desire of human beings to be gods. We can actually trace that forward in the story of Nimrod and the Tower of Babel. And this isn't commonly taught from this perspective. So I'm interested in what you guys think about this, because up until recently, I never really thought about this like this before. So we get the story. We get Genesis 10:8-10, which says, "Cush fathered Nimrod. He was the first on the earth to be a mighty man. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore, it was said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. The beginning of his kingdom was Babel, Erech, Akkad, and Calna in the land of Shinar." Okay, and then we skip forward a little bit to Genesis 11:1-9, and that tells the story of the Tower of Babel. It says, "Now the whole earth had one language and the same words, and as people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, 'Come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly.' And they had brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. Then they said, 'Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth.' And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower, which the children of man had built. And the Lord said, 'Behold, they are one people, and they have all one language. And this is only the beginning of what they will do. And nothing they propose to do will now be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and there confuse their language, so that they may not understand one another's speech.' So the Lord dispersed them from there over the face of all the earth, and they left off building the city. Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the languages of all the earth, and from there the Lord dispersed them over the face of the earth." So that's Genesis 11:1-9. Now, the non-canonical book of Jasher gives us some more information, some more really interesting details to the Tower of Babel story, and disclose the author's belief about the true motivation. Now, again, Jasher, it's not in the Bible, it's non-canonical. You can take it as a history book, but at the very least, it tells us what whoever authored this book, it tells us what he was thinking, how he in his own time was thinking about this story, how he was interpreting it. So it can help in those regards. So this comes from Jasher 9:20-26. And it says, "And King Nimrod reigned securely, and all the earth was under his Control, and all the earth was of one tongue, and words of union. And all the princes of Nimrod and his great men took counsel together, Phut, Mitzrayim, Cush, and Canaan with their families, and they said to each other, come, let us build ourselves a city, and in it a strong tower, and its top reaching heaven, and we will make ourselves famed, so that we may reign upon the whole world, in order that the evil of our enemies may cease from us, that we may reign mightily over them, and that we may not become scattered over the earth on account of their wars. And they all went before the king, and they told the king these words, and the king agreed with them in this affair, and he did so. Now, just pause real quick. When it says their enemies, if the whole world was there, who are their enemies? You know, God. that's who their enemy is. God and the holy angels, not the fallen ones, but the holy ones. Because again, they're not talking about people in other. This was the whole world gathered in one place. So that was their enemies. But anyway. And all the families assembled, consisting of about 600,000 men, and they went to seek an extensive piece of ground to build the city on the tower. And they sought in the whole earth and found none like the valley at the east of the land of Shinar, about 2 days' walk, and they journeyed there, and they dwelt there. And they began to make bricks and burn fires to build the city and the tower that they had imagined to complete. And the building of the tower was unto them a transgression and a sin. And they began to build it. And whilst they were building against the Lord God of heaven, they imagined in their hearts to war against him and to ascend into heaven. And all these people and all the families divided themselves into three parts. The first said, we will ascend into heaven and fight against him. The second said, we will ascend into heaven and place our own gods there and serve them. And the third part said, we will ascend to heaven and smite him with bows and spears. And God knew all their works and all their evil thoughts, and he saw the city and the tower which they were building. And the story continues, you know, God, basically what it says in Genesis, it gives a little bit more detail, but basically God comes down, messes it all up. It does not work out well for the human beings. But this account, if we think about it metaphorically, this account shows the desire within mankind to ascend above the rest of humanity, achieve godhood, and reign over the rest of the unenlightened. Now, while maintaining a belief in the literal interpretation, in the literal accounts of the Bible, and so I'm saying, you know, I believe this it was a thing that happened, but we could even think of the story of Nimrod and the Tower of Babel in a metaphorical sense to learn something about the human condition, to learn about humanity in general, to learn something about ourselves, even. Nimrod, the individual, seeks to ascend past the rest of humanity, and even more, he wishes to rise above and vanquish the view of God held by the rest of the world in order to establish himself as a God. Now, the rest of the human beings in the world being of one language and the same words, which means that if you look that up in the Hebrew from Genesis, it means that not only did they speak the same physical language, but they all expressed the same ideas. They were in agreement about everything. It's almost like groupthink or like a hive mind kind of deal. But they were all in Greek. Think of leftists today. but anyway, they were completely unenlightened, right? Yet Nimrod was still able to use them in order to initiate his own ascension. And at the end of the story, God himself completely ruins the plan and teaching that there is no higher than the God of the Bible. So the desire of Nimrod, it's a similar promise made within things like New Age and some other religions and stuff. Only instead of ruling politically, the individual has the benefit of feeling more enlightened than his non-New Age friends and family, who all metaphorically share one speech and one language. Completely inferior from the individual New Age believer's inner Nimrod, who desires to move past such things, right? So in a sense, the enlightened individual has the option to enjoy a sense of spiritual superiority over those around him. And this is actually how a New Age believer can use the unenlightened around him, similar to how Nimrod, if we think of him metaphorically, to aid in his own ascension by consistently and increasingly thinking of himself as more enlightened than those around him and feeding off of his own sense of superiority. So much like Nimrod in the account, however, this can't be maintained forever, and there will come a point when the whole process will be destroyed and the individual will be busted back down to earth with the rest of us. That's what happened to me when I came out of New Age. It's not like I decided I came out of New Age and I didn't want, I was busted down. Now this goes back to that ancient deceptive promise of personal godhood. Instead of inspiring benevolence, it actually can be used as an excuse to indulge in pride and arrogance and a sense of superiority. And rather than being freeing and enlightening, New Age and Gnosticism and some other things like that promote this ancient idea of bondage within one's own self to become one's own God and to never be able to escape from the limitations of the human condition. Jesus, on the other hand, offers freedom. He offers truth and life and total freedom. That was just some of my thoughts on the Tower of Babel story, how we could think of it and learn something about us inside and some of the inner struggles of what it means to be human, in this sense, wanting to be one's own God, and how we really do need to set that aside and follow Jesus, the perfect creator of everything, as opposed to the imperfect version of ourselves today, if that makes sense. So anyway, I want to know what you think about this. What do you think about personal godhood and the story of the Tower of Babel and taking stories like this and kind of thinking of them while maintaining their literal accounts, but just trying to think of them kind of as a metaphor for certain parts of the human condition? I think that can be helpful. So anyway, if you haven't had a chance to do so, make sure you head on over to joshpeckdisclosure.com, get a whole bunch of free videos, free podcasts. Everything on there is free. And the reason that we're able to keep it free is because kind and generous people like you are willing to donate. So there is a donate page there. Or for as little as a dollar a month, you can go to patreon.com/Josh Peck and help out there. So all that being said, and if you can't donate financially, that's okay. You can donate your time, you can share videos, leave comments, engage in a conversation, all that kind of stuff helps too. And prayer above all. Pray for me, pray for these videos and this channel and the website and my family, and pray for this entire community. Including yourselves as well, because we love you too. So thank you all so much for joining. Until next time, take care and God bless.
Hey, everybody. I have decided to start a Patreon site, and I'm very excited about it because this offers you at least one more avenue that can get us away from the YouTube and AdSense and all that ridiculousness that struggles so hard to shut down Christian conservative speakers such as myself. So if you want to help out, please consider becoming one of my patrons. That would be great. Now, it's only because of all of you guys that I've been able to continue doing this all these years. But those of you who are brand new, I cover things from a Christian conservative perspective, as I said before, but we also deal with some fringe topics, such as aliens, UFOs, ghosts, paranormal things. We deal with some things from the political realm, such as Second Amendment and First Amendment rights, things like that. But most importantly, we deal with the gospel of Jesus Christ, how best to present this information to friends who might not be believers. How do we talk to one another about these things? Well, we deal with all that, and I always take questions, I always take feedback, I always take advice, especially from my supporters. So if you haven't had a chance, go to my Patreon site, which is patreon.com/Josh Peck, very easy to remember, and consider becoming a patron for as little as a dollar a month. That is nothing. And it would greatly help me out, it'll help you out, and as I always say, when we come together as a community, we can build something amazing together. So let's do that. Thank you so much, and until next time, take care and God bless.